journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
The What Podcast, a podcast for Bonnaroovians by Bonnaroovians. Welcome inside of our homes, buses, and basements. Barry Corder, Lord Taco, Brad Steiner. Alongside today, Bonnaroovian David is going to join us from Patreon, and Larkin Poe, Barry Corder.
Larkin Poe, yeah, reached out to them and should stress this was well before the whole COVID-19 virus pandemic, so we don't talk about that. Larkin Poe, kind of Rebecca and Megan from down Calhoun, Georgia, just 45 minutes from Chattanooga or so. We talk a little bit about this is their second visit to Bonnaroo. Hmm. They actually started.
It would have been. Yeah. We'll see if they can make it next year.
We're convinced it's. I'm not giving up yet, but. Okay. Larkin Poe, they started as the Lovell Sisters, as a trio. They're one of those groups that I've been able to follow since, you know, the inception and talk to. So they were nice enough to reach out. It's another one of these interviews that we did, that I did without you, Brad, and, you know, like you did Ed O'Brien last week. So we're adapting, we're figuring it out, but
so. Do you like Larkin Poe and follow them because you just find them to be very attractive?
They are attractive. Uh-huh. They're also really good. They were a super band last year and rock and roll band. They can play.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well, I like them quite a bit. Well, I'm excited. They've got a new song, Keep Digging, just came out this week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. We'll check that out here soon, and then we'll talk to David from Patreon. But first, let's get into
Patreon names. What you were going to say?
That's not what I was going to say, but you know what? I'm here for you, buddy.
All right. Mike Tyson Group, Aaron Carlson, Bill, David Grimes, who we're going to talk to on the show, Frank Swanson, Lisa Condor, Bill Hanley, Timothy Proctor, and Chloe Hannon are in the Mike Tyson Group.
So, I guess this was it this week or last week that we started to. I guess it was this week that they want to reopen the economy, reopen the world in some parts of the country. The world being very, you know, generic. But you've got a governor in Georgia who doesn't know that COVID-19 is contagious. You have a governor in Tennessee who thinks that everybody's going to rush to bars and restaurants because Lord knows, you know what I want right now is to eat at Chili's. You've got
bowling alleys.
You know, I mean, there've been some funny jokes and online memes, but you know, the one that resonates is, you know, doing this is like having a peeing in a non-peeing section in a swimming pool. You know, it makes as much sense. So, yeah, we'll see.
And I know you think that I'm being, you know, I don't know, a little bit too harsh, but it's not happening. And I don't mean to rain on people's parade and be negative here, but we need to start wrapping our heads around that this is not happening. Voodoo Fest is end of October in New Orleans. And New Orleans does not shy away from parties. Let me be totally frank with you. The people here treated this thing as if it was a hurricane and they were not going to react to it landfall. And at any moment, it could swing and miss. But it made landfall and then it shut everything down for a while. If New Orleans is not going to throw a party at the end of October, I don't see anybody else in the country throwing a party anytime in the fall. And it sucks, and it blows, and it hurts. But you know, I there's just nothing about it that makes sense. I can't figure out a justification to put, 50,000 people at risk. I just can't figure it out. I can't figure out the justification and what the argument would be.
Yeah, and again, I keep thinking about it. It's like, which event should it be? I mean, everybody wants to open, right? So which one is it? College football? Is that more important than festivals or golf, whatever? You know, which one should it be that's going to be sort of the test?
And I
think as we get closer to reality, the people that are making the decisions are having that same question. You know, should it be us? Why? Well, let's wait and see what somebody else does. So, no, I agree with you. I don't think it's happening either. I think we're looking at next year. And then it's even going to be, you know, what's it going to look like? You know, I don't think a lot of people are just going to rush back into 2019 level of crowds. I mean, some of the stories I've done, the restaurants, the health department, they're talking about restaurants maintaining the 6 foot thing and the social distancing long after this happens. No more, you know, 12 tops, people sitting elbow to elbow with each other. And that's just from their point of view. From like your point, you know, do you want to go to a bar that has that many people sitting next to you? There's a lot getting ready to happen that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And if you listen to this podcast, I'm betting your answer is going to be, of course, I don't care. But think about it a Friday, Saturday at around 4 o'clock when it's really, really hot. In Manchester, and you are somewhat in the midst of a show on The Witch, and somebody sweaty bumps into you or wants to crowd surf. You really want to touch a sweaty stranger?
You know, when you're saying that, and I don't mean to be disgusting, but I mean, one of the things we'd like is that 3 o'clock in the morning shower when there's nobody else in there.
Uh-huh.
Not sure I want to go into any of those showers this year. Even if I'm by myself in there, I'm not sure that's going to be a good idea.
Yeah, man.
That's a great point.
I mean, I don't know if we necessarily think about it all that much because it's just like a unicorn in our brain. It's Bonnaroo. It's life. It's experience. It's like, let's just go do something. But then when we're actually doing it, we're like, I don't know. Like, for instance, you talk about how you leave the house once a week to do insert thing here. Well, I leave once a week to go to a local brewery, Urban South. I pick up beer for the week, and then I pick up 10 pounds of crawfish at a place that has a crawfish boil. And I bring it back, and it's my Saturday tradition. I sit on the back porch, and I eat crawfish, and I drink beer. Just yesterday when I did it this week, for the first time, I really felt like when he handed me the bag, it was the first time I was like, I'm touching the bag that you're touching.
That's
a bag when nobody else is around me. You think that you want to, you know, be slinging spicy pies or, you know, empanadas?
I leave the house here and go for a walk once a day, and people are also up there walking or jogging, and they go on the complete other side of the street, you know?
Yeah.
And these, we're theoretically healthy people.
Yeah, and think about it.
Now you don't even want to be next to two people on a street. I can't imagine, you know.
So then if things start to normalize or get at least better and the trend starts to go in the right direction come August or September, and then what happens if, you know, out of nowhere pops up 350 cases come the 1st of October or the end of September, then panic. Total panic. Let's say you have a festival that you are putting on at the end of September or the middle of September, and then something crazy happens. You know, you feel like you're out in front of it in July and August, and then all of a sudden September hits, and then there's like 200, 300 cases pop up in September. You don't think that you have just invested how many millions of dollars, and you're now looking at a week from now, 2 weeks from now, it could be from 300 to 1,000, and then you are screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's too dicey.
Yeah. And all the, you know, the 2018 flu, the second wave was way worse than the first one. So it concerns me that we're doing this reopening this week. I just, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Especially when you have states that are just now getting to the beginning of their peak. Like, right. Louisiana is not even close to hitting that 2-week threshold of cases going down. So they're not even close to being opening up something. But what happens if, you know, by the way, your pool analogy is totally perfect. You know, the borders, it turns out, are open. And people can drive and continue their life and move about, you know, the pool as much as they want to. You may not think they're peeing on you, but they are. The water's getting warmer.
And it's like you said, the people bringing it back. It's not, it doesn't have to be a sinister thing. It could be a family member who wants to go see their parents out of state. Right. You know,
that's exactly how the numbers shot up like crazy in New Orleans.
Exactly.
Mardi Gras. You didn't know you were sick. Your immune system was compromised because of the debauchery of the weekend. And then you went and visited grandma, and the one visit to grandma infected the entire old folks home.
Yeah. Grace, my daughter, Grace, one of her coworkers at a Bonnaroo that they both worked has tested 4 times positive. Showing no signs, but every time she keeps getting tested, she's got it. But how many other people are out there like that?
Did I say this on the podcast last week or the week before? So sitting in this chair doing the show, somehow I threw my back out, and my back hurt so damn bad for 4 days. Literally, as soon as I got up doing the show, I was out. And it was a back pain that I've never felt before, and it was at the base of my spine, and I didn't think anything about it. I was like, this just sucks. I'm going to lay down for a couple of days. It'll be fine. So then Wednesday hits, and George Stephanopoulos tested positive for coronavirus, and he showed no symptoms. He showed nothing wrong, but he wanted to go back to work. So before they let him back in the studio, they wanted to test him. Well, he tested positive. He had no symptoms. Nothing was wrong. The only thing that had come up in the last week, back pain. He threw his back out, and his back hurt. So imagine my panic after hurting my back, doing a podcast about Bonnaroo, seeing George Stephanopoulos basically test positive for coronavirus because his back hurt.
You're going to think I'm making this up, but I had the same issue last weekend, but I know I did it because we spent all day cleaning and moving boxes and everything. But I'm glad I didn't hear that report because I wouldn't been like you.
No kidding. It freaked me out. And so if, to your point, if you don't know that you have, hell, the wife all week has had a knee problem. This woman is the most in shape person you've ever met in your life, and her knee hurts into the bone. Coronavirus. I mean, like,
it's what we're all gonna do.
I know, and the point is okay. How now? Put that now. Multiply that by 30,000.
Well, but I mean, that's looking at it from a point of view of somebody who's thinking they have it. It's those people that think they're Superman and that this is all a hoax that want to go out there and are spreading it around. They're the ones. Both are worrisome.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So take the political part of it out. All right. So take the lady who I saw on Fox the other day who was screaming about reopening the economy out of her SUV window. And the Fox News guy asks her, so what exactly are you wanting to do? She goes, I need my roots, Dad. You know, and like they're literally just worried about their haircut. So this person who may not be all there or thinks it's a government conspiracy or this, that, or the other, decides to, you know, go to the event that you decide to go to.
Yeah, you know what they're calling those
lucky
people,
me.
Right?
Yeah, that's that.
Branch Covidians.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. No, right. You're exactly right. Somebody with that agenda who wants to decide for you,
right?
You know,
right?
That they're going out. That's exactly right.
And I want to love all these Bonnaroo people. I want to love everybody that's there because we are all sharing a communal experience and hopefully values that we all appreciate. But not everybody thinks like me. Not everybody Not everybody thinks like Taco. Not everybody thinks like you.
Right.
It's just too much. Too dicey and too scary. Like, so when Brian tells me that he's not going to be affected, he's going to go. Don't know if I would. I don't know.
I hadn't even started thinking. Let me read some more Patreon.
Yeah, and then we'll get into Larkin Poe.
Yep. Dan Sweeney, Dustin Gehrig, Haley, Mary T, Melanie, and Jesse Feldman, who we talked to last week, Mitchell Stafford, Musical Antlers, Parker Reeds, and Tori.
All right, let's talk to Larkin Poe on the What Podcast, a poor Bonnaroovians by Bonnaroovians with Barry Corder. Let's go.
But I spoke to you guys probably back in 2009 when you were
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, the Lovell sisters. I know you used to come to Chattanooga, and 2009 you did Bonnaroo, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
As the Lovell sisters. Let's do this, if you don't mind. Tell me which one of you is which so that listeners, myself included, can sort of get a read on who's talking when. Maybe we can figure out voices. Which one?
Yeah, this is Rebecca. Our voices are very similar, obviously, because we're sisters. But I'm the younger one. I play guitar and the lead singer and the main songwriter for the band. I'm Rebecca.
And I am Megan. I play lap steel, and I'm the older sister.
Nice. Thank you for doing that. I have so much I want to get to. Yeah, one of the things that I especially, and I know Brad does too, that we love about doing this podcast, and Bonnaroo especially, is sort of following bands. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I think that festival does really well is bring people back as they develop and get bigger. And we've talked with other bands about what a thrill that is, you know, to play a teeny tiny stage in front of a couple hundred people and then years later play to many, many, many people. So let's start there. What's it mean for you guys to be heading back to Bonnaroo?
I love this question because I do think that's a really insightful look at, you know, the way that Bonnaroo helps to follow artists as they grow and change, because, you know, who we were as the Lovell sisters whenever we first started as, you know, middling teenagers compared to who we are now as Larkin Poe and we're in our late 20s, we're very different artists, very different people. You know, the essence is the same, but the clothing and the outfitting and the experience has completely shifted. And it feels really nostalgic to get back to Bonnaroo with all the memories intact from then to here. I mean, we've gotten to do some unbelievable touring since that first time performing at Bonnaroo in 2009. We've, you know, been on the tour with Keith Urban, been on the road with Bob Seger. We've opened up for, you know, ZZ Top and just done a bunch of wild and crazy stuff that I think our, you know, 17-year-old selves could never have imagined. So getting to bring all that experience with us as we come back to the Bonnaroo stage, I think it's going to be an absolute blast this year.
And you were here, you were there rather in 18. And I was just looking back through some of our notes, and we do, Brad and I do a thing called Bonnaroo Roulette, where we spin a wheel and land on an act. And then theoretically, a lot of times it's bands we maybe don't know much about, but sometimes it's bands that we just want to talk about. And that's what we did in 18. I think you were our third Bonnaroulette spin. that should mean a whole lot.
To chat about.
No, it was terrific.
No, it means plenty. I mean, to be able to be in people's, you know, minds and hearts, that's what makes the whole thing tick. It is a bit surreal. We've done so much touring internationally, and to have friends around the world, and, you know, this past year we've played China and Tokyo for the first time, and getting to go to Australia again this year. Like, you realize that the connections that bind people, they truly are global, and just to be remembered feels really nice.
Let me go back, because like I said, I want to jump all over the place, because you guys have done so much, and it's such an important story. But first of all, I'll let people know you guys are from Calhoun, Georgia, which is about 40 minutes from Chattanooga. As I always say at the paper, when people do well, we claim you. So we claim you as Chattanoogans.
Hey, man, we'll take it. We'll take it. We, yeah, Calhoun is, you know, 40 minutes south, right off 75. So we all the time as, you know, Megan, what would we call it, like 15, 16, coming up to the Signal Mountain Operate. We were coming through Chattanooga all of the time.
We did a lot of our like first musical experiences were actually in Chattanooga. So we claim it as well.
Nice. But Nashville's home now, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask.
Maybe 4.5 years ago.
I wanted to ask, because we're recording this on the Friday, the week of the tornado. So I just wanted to check. You guys, obviously, did you survive everything? I mean, were there any damage that you personally had to deal with?
We have been crazy looking at all of the damage that has been done, and we went yesterday and actually tried to do some help clean up, and the damage was just extraordinary, and the homes that have been lost and the businesses that have been lost, it's really heartbreaking to see. But it is also heartwarming to see all the people that have showed up and, you know, people were out in the thousands helping out their neighbors. So it's really heartwarming to see people come together.
You do get both sides of that. My in-law's house was destroyed in 97 when the tornado hit the day before Easter. So I'm having all these memories of the helicopters flying over and the church groups just walking up and down the street, helping people carry brush and limbs and anything, carrying water. So you really see both sides, but I also know it's a long haul. I mean, it's not over in a week, you know. There's a lot to clean up. And
It is certainly not. And it has been really, like you said, Megan, shocking to see how neighborhoods are completely reshaped. And it'll be equally interesting and, I think, empowering to see how humans are capable of rising above and rebuilding and making something, you know, more beautiful than there was before. I believe that that's going to happen.
Yeah, was it 364 houses and 100-and-something buildings were either destroyed or damaged? So, but, yeah. You know, not to make light of it, but if Nashville knows anything these days, it's how to build.
Mm-hmm. This is true. She is booming right now.
It's unbelievable. And for people who don't know their geography, Nashville is about just a little bit farther away from Manchester and Bonnaroo than Chattanooga is. So it's obviously on all of our minds, which is why I wanted to ask that and the fact that you guys live there. But talk about, and you have, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about, you were at Riverbend, which is our big city festival last year, and I was there and it was a terrific show. This Bonnaroo lineup is stacked, as we've talked about many, many times. We haven't seen the schedule yet, but I'm hoping people will have a chance to see you guys. Have you looked at the schedule yourselves?
I have, and you're talking about this most recent year where it's Blackberry Smoke and Mavis and all the real people that I revere. I think that Riverbend has done an incredible job of pulling together this star-studded lineup. That if people aren't familiar with some of the bands, go out and see them anyway, because Riverbend has picked like some gems for people. I mean, Blackberry Smoke, Charlie Starr, the frontman for Blackberry Smoke, is like my all-time hero. He is such a badass. And if you are not familiar with Blackberry Smoke, you must. So go to Riverbend this year and see them perform.
and that's part of why I wanted to bring that up. These festivals, big and small, are important to not just the acts, but fans, right? I mean, there's such an opportunity to see and several acts at once, number one, but also maybe acts that you're not familiar with. That's a big part of the reason for going, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the biggest reason for going. And a lot of our formative experiences with music were absolutely at festivals where, you know, you're able to walk around and just take a sampling of music that you didn't even know you would like. I think it's especially important for children to be taken to festivals because our parents took us, you know, to Riverbend many times and all the way up into North Carolina. In Boone, North Carolina, there's Merle Fest, which is an incredible Americana, roots American music festival that we were taken to and got bit by the bluegrass bug, you know, in our early teens. And we would never have known that that would have even been something that would remotely connect with us, but just being given the opportunity to experience music in that very live and organic way. It's so special. Festivals, I adore festival season. I'm so glad it's almost upon us this year.
Yeah, I want to come back to your parents in a minute, but to compare, Riverbend is a city festival. Probably last year there were 20,000 people. Bonnaroo's already sold out, going to be 80,000 people there when you play. And you've done Glastonbury, which has come up on this podcast several times as sort of the model that Ashley Capps had in mind for Bonnaroo. Talk a little bit about the differences in playing those and Merlefest. Are there differences? Are there big differences for you guys as a performer?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think geographically it makes a big difference if you're in Europe or the UK as opposed to playing the festival in, you know, Oregon State or, you know, or Tennessee. Like, you're definitely bumping into different people with different cultural importances and, you know, even just, you know, the setting of a festival. We played a lot of festivals in Colorado this year. What was the one in the Cascades that we played? It was a really awesome blues festival right in the middle of the Cascade Mountains. Like, just really intriguing differences. But specifically, I think, between the U.S. and European festivals, there's less differences than you would think. You know, music lovers are music lovers around the world, and you may not be speaking the same language when you're, you know, playing it. You know, one of the big rock festivals in Germany, but the feeling is the same, that everyone is there to achieve the same purpose, which is to connect and to celebrate music as an art form. And that's really special. But I mean, of course, Glastonbury is one of the tops. It's such a massive, it's a festival of epic proportion. Like when you drive in, you just can't even fathom how huge the site is. And also how, I mean, the lengths that people are willing to go to endure the festival itself. I mean, I think the people who have attended, you know, even a Riverbend or a Bonnaroo, it's like you go and it's incredibly hot during the day, and by the end of the day, you're tired. And then you go to Bonnaroo, and there's people who are really enduring the heat for a three-day weekend. But then you go to Glastonbury, and there are people that are there enduring not only heat during the day, but a three-day weekend of about 18 bajillion mud puddles that you could potentially fall into and go down. You may never find you again once you fall into some of these mud puddles. So it's like, you know, you got, it's the spice of life. You got to go out and experience things. And I think music festivals are a great way to do that.
You mentioned your dad and your mom, David and Tricia. David, and I remember speaking to you, whatever, 12 years ago, a big influence on you guys musically, right? And I think that's, I was thinking about it before I called, that it's my personal opinion that it's every parent's responsibility to teach music and music history to their children. Like my kids do very well at trivia night. You guys had similar upbringings, right?
Our parents are big music lovers. So we do feel lucky to have grown up into a household where a wide variety of music was being played. You know, our mom was really wanted us to be involved in classical music. And so she was, you know, playing for us like baby Bach tapes. So we were listening to everything from like classical to, she loved folk music, Alison Krauss and Union Station and, you know, the Carpenters. And then on the other side, our dad was playing us all like the classic rock records, everything from Ozzy to the Allman Brothers. So we do feel very lucky that they are huge lovers of all different kinds of genres. So we've really grown up loving a lot of different music. So I think our influence are definitely fairly wide.
Mm-hmm.
I think that shows, right? I mean, that the Lovell sisters, when you were a trio with your sister Rebecca, with Jessica, right? Was a string, basically, trio, right? And the show that I saw last year with some amazing guitar and rhythm, not necessarily that same band, right? Talk about how that influence and coming up with that sort of a household has helped you guys develop over the years.
Yeah, I absolutely think you can hear. You can hear. You know, what is the saying? You can see the shadow that is cast by a tree. The shadow cast by the tree shows you where the tree is going to grow, or something like. There's some like deep saying about, you know, following in your parents' footsteps, essentially, which I think is really powerful, and I think it absolutely played huge with our development as artists from initially being so involved in classical music, which really gave us a great basis in understanding music and having a work ethic about music and having ear training, and then falling in love with bluegrass music, which I think kind of took place all of us together as a family. Our parents were definitely aware of Alison Krauss and Jerry Douglas and you know, folk music as a general rule, but whenever we got involved in bluegrass as 13, 14-year-olds, our folks were definitely going out and having a lot of fresh experiences with us, where we were all kind of becoming inundated and bitten by the bluegrass bug at the same time. But then, like Megan said, simultaneously, you know, there was so much classic rock being played in the house when we were young. You know, Dad loved Queen records. Dad loved, you know, the Stones and Led Zeppelin and, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and all across the board, just constantly having music playing. So as Megan and I continue to develop as songwriters, you know, once we had the touring experiences as the Lovell sisters with our big sister, we knew that we loved making music. There was a lot of foundational, you know, experiences that took place with, I think, our commitment to making music. We did start to toy with the genres that we were moving in for Larkin Poe, by introducing more electrified instruments in order to achieve the sounds that we had heard growing up with all those classic rock records. Because when you're playing in a bluegrass string band, you do not have a drummer, you do not have amplifiers, you do not have effects pedals, you just don't have electrified instruments on stage. So that was a big leap of change for us whenever Megan picked up the lap steel, which is essentially the electrified version of the dobro, and I transitioned from mandolin and violin over to predominantly electric guitar. So just the sonic shift was huge, and I think it opened up a lot of doors for us creatively that we never would have even considered, you know, walking through until you're suddenly doing it and you realize all at once, oh my gosh, we're a little rock band now. How did this happen? It feels great.
Was it that kind of a transition? It was just a normal? I know when, you know, Jessica left, she's older and left and decided to go a different route. Was it that sort of moment where you said, well, we've got to decide to go forward, and how should we go forward? Or did it just sort of naturally occur, or how did it happen?
That's so funny to me, because I feel, all of us feel, you know, that we are the masters of our future, and that, you know, by the strength of our will and by the habits that we do or don't break, you know, that we can change the outcome of things. But I think as time goes by, I'm more a firm believer in the organic nature of the way that things unfold. So there was, I mean, elements of intentionality that Megan and I had, I think, when approaching the genre shift over the course of, you know, maybe the first 3 or 4 years of Larkin Poe. But by the same token, you know, we were 18, 19 at the time. And so while you may think that you're being intentional, there's also a lot of, you know, dilly-dallying and being 17, 18 years old that takes place. And so I do think that luck and just kind of, I don't even know what you want to call it, if you want to call it, you know, destiny or I'm not sure what forces are at play, but it definitely happened organically for us. And it's just become more and more clear that this is the road that we want to be on. Therefore, we travel further down the road of roots rock and really celebrating roots American music, but in a little, you know, badass rock outfit and trying to be as true to the sounds that we hear in our head as we can be.
And it is a badass rock outfit. I mean, I really do hope people get to see it, because it blew my hair back last year, that set. So it was terrific. Would you
that's
could
what we like to hear.
It was, that's why I wanted to talk to you. I mean, I'm serious. It was great. And I think you guys opened for the Warren Treaty, right? Am I getting my days? Or that, no, that was Taz. You were the night before, I think. But
yes, we were the night before.
Right. Are you guys, would you consider yourselves, after what we just talked about, sort of historians? And I'm asking because going to a Glastonbury or a Merlefest or a Bonnaroo, do they hold any special meanings to you guys from a sort of a history place where you think about all the people, the bands that you've loved that have played there before?
Man, I've never thought about that. Megan, what do you feel? Does that ever cross your mind?
I think that we think back to like the people that we listen to specifically lately. Like we've been becoming so involved in blues music and kind of carrying those traditions forward that we definitely think about ourselves. I think as like ambassadors, like bringing, trying to bring those names to the forefront again. Like we're on stage, we're definitely like telling people like who this song was inspired by. And I think that we do think about ourselves as like, maybe not historians in that way, but definitely like bringing it into our generation.
Mm-hmm. And I think applying that same kind of thought to the different festivals that we have played, there is a certain amount of gravitas that I think some of these festivals certainly can, you know, wield. They have this kind of otherworldly atmosphere when you enter the hallowed grounds, you know, of Glastonbury. I think actually, though, the biggest kind of aha moment that we've had in recent history in terms of time and place was getting to play out at the, I guess it's the Monterey County Fairgrounds, where we took place in a festival out in Monterey, California. But it was the original location of the Monterey Pop Festival, so we got to play on the stage where Jimmy burned his guitar in that epic, you know, footage. Hair raising. But then by the same token, you're so distracted by your own performance, you know, you're focusing on, in my case, not forgetting the lyrics or not tripping over all the cables on the stage, that there's only so much like absorbing of the space that you can really, really do while you're performing. But even so, that was an especially cool one getting to play on that stage out in Monterey. That was special.
Yeah, I'm glad you, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, that's probably everybody of any age has that CD or album in their collection. That Pops Festival was amazing. You mentioned Mavis. She's coming back to our River Bend. I mean, that's like watching history personified to me. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
She was at, Bonnaroo 2 years ago, the same year you guys were, and to see her, you know, talking about being there when the civil rights marches and all, it kind of blows your mind when you think about it, and
yeah,
it's important to remember that.
Well, we had the great pleasure of getting to meet Mavis at an event that we did late last year, and I think for Megan and myself, as you know, late 20-something musicians, having had a lot of experiences under our belt and really cherishing music and the experience and the human connection that music can bring, and getting to sit down and speak with someone who is as sharp and open and vulnerable and beautiful as Mavis is, that really brings it full circle. And it puts everything into context of what purpose music serves in our lives as humans. And it is kind of this greater than the sum of parts type moment for the human spirits when you do align and connect through music. And I think that is the overriding takeaway message for festivals, is you gotta go out, you gotta experience it, you gotta open yourself up and share something with your fellow man, because it's a special way to do it. It's one of the things that makes us most human, so it should be cherished.
Well said. I want to ask, because we ask everybody on here, have you looked at this year's Bonnaroo lineup, and who are you excited to see, and are you going to have time to hang out?
Oh, you know, we're playing on Thursday. Isn't that right, Megan? We're playing on Thursday?
I believe, yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah. So I think that we're going to try to get out there and see some folks. I would love to see Miley Cyrus. I think that she's doing really incredible things for music heritage in a way when you kind of dig deeper into her stage performances. She leaps in a lot of classic rock tunes and gives shout outs to artists that I think a lot of younger people may not be familiar with. So I would love to go and see a Miley Cyrus show for sure. I think she's making cool waves for music. But
no, she's definitely on my list. To us, Thursday has become one of our favorite nights because it's Discovery Night. you know, it's usually filled with a lot of acts that a lot of people have not heard, and the energy is up. Everyone is so excited to be there. It's a lot of fun.
It'll be great. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Thank you very much yourselves, both of you. And I look forward to seeing you Thursday at Bonnaroo.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We'll look for you there.
Thanks, guys.
Larkin Poe on the What Podcast. Barry Quarter, nice job. Nice
Thank
job
you.
There, buddy.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
like you've been doing this for a little while.
I've been around a bit. It was fun talking to them. Fun catching up, like I said.
Before we jump in with David, I do have a random question for both. You got a show that you're watching? You got is something that you are getting into before you you're obsessed with Michelle? Streaming?
Go ahead, Taco. I'll tell you mine. Because I'm looking for new ones.
Really? Well, before Taco, you get tacos. Mine's Schitt's Creek. Yeah. I cannot believe how much I missed this show. It just finished, right? So, but it's been on for so long and I had no idea. This is the funniest damn show. It took like 4 episodes for me to get into it, but my God, once I'm into it, I literally just walk around the house going, David, David,
yeah,
all day. I can't stop talking like her. It is so much fun.
Yeah. How about you, Taco? I think we must have lost him.
Taco's giving us that buffering stare. It's like we all very clear with the buffering stare now.
I think I turned into Kelsey for a second.
No, but what's the show that you're obsessed with right now?
What was the question?
The show that you're obsessed with right now.
Dark. Absolutely. Watch Dark. It is The Outsider. It is Stranger Things. It is Donnie Darko. It's Back to the Future. It's a German show. There's a lot of Volkswagens in it.
That's it. He saw it on a Volkswagen message board, and so now he's watching it on TV.
All right. On my list of TV requirements, that would have never come up.
I will say, the one person, I'm terrible at it. Will you give me a recommendation? Oh my God, that sounds great. I'll get into it. I'll never watch it. Barry Quarter is very good about it. If I've ever suggested anything, always watches it. What have you been doing?
Yeah, you and I talked about Ozark. I thought season 3 of Ozark was terrific. I like that title. I went back and started watching Justified again. I missed that with Timothy Oliphant. And a buddy of mine recommended 10 Star. And I've watched both seasons in the last 3 days. Tim Roth is in it. He's ends up being a police chief. And it's like Ozark, which I know you're familiar with.
Yeah.
You can't imagine the things that happen.
Look, I don't like specific reasons, mainly because it's a Showtime show, and Showtime shows have a problem.
There's no Volkswagens, I imagine.
There's no Volkswagens, I'm out. Showtime shows have a problem because Showtime has no hits, so they make the they milk as much as they can out of them, and they force the show to never have an ending, keep things going that are nonsensical, just so they can get more season and more seasons and more seasons out of them. It's the reason why Shameless is so unwatchable.
There's a bunch that are so formulaic that a 20-minute scene could have minutes. And then like HBO, there's going to be nudity every 4.5 minutes, and there's going to be all kinds of,
man, just like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, if you're not watching via YouTube, you can always watch our thing now with moving pictures on our YouTube channel, the What Podcast on YouTube. But if you are watching on YouTube or the live stream, right over Barry's right shoulder is a Bonnaroo poster. And stop staring at it because, it swear to God, it looks to me like it says Butteroo.
can't Butteroo.
It just, from this distance, Butteroo.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that YouTube, because I want to do, I thought about this. We can't play near the music that we do and on the just the audio version of the podcast. A lot of the breaks and stuff that you put in that on YouTube. So for anybody who, you know, wonders, they are different.
All right. So. Well, before we get into our chat with David, let's read some more Patreons and then talk to a Patreon.
All right. That last group was in the Bring Back the Arch group, by the way. This one's the Glazed group with Chelsea Davis, Evan Brown, Gordon Silver, Jason Hazelbaker. Richards and Clay Wilhoit.
All right, another Patreon chat. David from Ohio.
Thanks for showing up. Where are you? You're in Ohio, as if I can tell by your shirt.
Yes, yeah, I'm up in Northeast Ohio. I live in a town called North Georgetown, and if you Google map that, you'll see a lot of farm and green. But it's if you draw a line between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, somewhere right in the middle there.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Okay, yep. Right on.
Got your Yingling.
Here's the thing I've learned about Ohio people. They love Ohio. They love Ohio. They wear it. They hang it on their walls. It is just all about Ohio. I don't know what in the world they love so much about Ohio. But damn, you guys. You're all in.
Hey, I have a question first before we go too much further. Anyone else seeing the big what logo on front of David's forehead, or is that just on my screen, Taco?
That's probably just on your screen.
Okay. I just want to make sure because it's like right. All right.
Yeah.
So if it's something we can fix now, let's fix it now. So, cool.
All right. Well, everything's set up, so everybody looks good and everybody's in the right spot, so we're ready.
Yeah.
Shoot, cool. Man. We're already going.
What were you saying, David?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, I was saying that's true. If you went down and I gave an OH to somebody, someone somewhere far away,
I-O.
Just give the IO, yeah. Automatic. You just do it.
Weird thing. And how many Bonnaroos deep are you?
One now. I was hoping to go for one more, but yeah, that's my first one. It's been years in the making. My wife and I, we met at Ohio State University, and we decided, you know what, we should go to Bonnaroo. And of course, that's when we're poor college students, so we're scraping by. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. Life gets a hold of you, and pretty soon, I'm getting old, older than you. Not quite as Barry, but
no, you're never going to get that number.
Yeah, take the easy shot.
Yeah. But then it gets a little bit tougher going out saying I'm going to camp out outside and underneath that Tennessee sun. So we scraped up a little bit and finally made it out there. Had a 5-year-old. She got to go hang out with grandma and grandpa, and we finally made it out there, you know, 10 years in the making. So, but it was totally worth it. It was awesome.
Yeah. Her weekend sounded a lot like mine, hanging out with Grandpa Barry.
Pretty much.
Not too different.
Yeah. Was it everything you hoped?
Yeah. You know, when, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, you go and almost every year, for me, it starts like in November. You get the pre-sale going, and then you get the lineup drop and hanging out with you guys, going all the different episodes and going on Reddit and Infru. You build this like excitement, and you're thinking, man, I hope it's going to be everything I thought it'd be. And for me, it was all those years and watching it online when they used to stream it online and stuff. And it was the best. It was the best time, and everything that we can, you know, thought it would be, it was even more. And I, you know, Barry, I think before you said, you know, you go and you smile ear to ear, and that's how it was, you know.
So last year was your first year?
Yeah.
And how many years did you sit around and just watch the conversation happen before you decided to pull the trigger and go?
If it was in college, that'd be early 2000s.
Really?
So
what was the piece of advice do you think that you got that helped you the most when you actually got there, that you actually put into effect, and you came afterwards, you're like, man, I'm so glad we did blank.
Yeah, they were right.
Yeah. There's just so many good pieces of advice that you scrape through with just being a lurker on you know, Reddit and Infru especially. But I think just doing it the way you want to do it. I'm more towards Barry, where I do walk-bys and you know, we had, you know, we go and we have their plan and what we wanted to do, and these must not, you know, we couldn't miss these people. And we did that, which was terrific. But really, it was just like, we ended up places where we didn't intend to, you know, end up. And it was great. You know, like it was what? All this planning, which was great.
What was the walk by that you found yourself at you loved?
Well, we started off, I think it was, this is going to be a while. I think the Thursday, I think we went to, we wanted to see Jay Bird, and Jay Bird was awesome. And that was just listening to the playlist and the recommendations and stuff. And she was terrific. And it was, you know, not a top level artist, but it was, you know, more intimate setting. And she came out and hung out with us after the set, and, you know, it was really cool. And then just going to, I don't know, there's just so many. I think, I'm trying to think, like War and Treaty was awesome. I know you guys mentioned that a lot. We were sitting out in the VIP tent next to this tent, and we were just sitting outside. I think it was around lunchtime. I was grabbing a lunch or something, having a beer. I'm like, what is that sound coming across the field? You know? And then it was just, it blew me away, blew my wife away, and just stuff like that, which they weren't really on my like to-do list, but it was great, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Brad, I stumbled across, playing music this morning. I think it was, we never talked about that Haim show, you know, of all the, did you go to that one?
I don't think so.
You know, it's a tad cloudy. I cannot necessarily remember if I went to the Haim show.
It was just so great. And then I found the music this morning and it reminded me, and I don't think we've ever even talked about that one, but it was a terrific show. And it was a complete walk by for me because I didn't know him.
Sorry, I had to fix my set. My apologies.
Yeah, it's all right. We're kind of casual. So, David, the fact that last year...
Because I think that she might be baking naked back there. I think that we might be making breakfast in another see-through shot last clothes? Week.
Was it last time she was picking up a package with like nothing, like, you know, a see-through or something? What
the hell's happening?
So when you were talking about that 10 years of buildup reminded me how worried I was about the whole camping experience way back, over planned, over stressed. Was that you guys? Or I mean, people have done it enough now and there's enough information out there, you know, it's maybe not as stressful as it was 15 years ago for me anyway. But what was that like, that whole planning? Did you guys overdo? Kind of goes back to Brad's earlier question.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I'll tell you what, I cheated because we went VIP and I went Mabon. So I camped with all that savings that we did. But that was the fun of it, was just going through and, you know, for when we knew we were going to go, when we got the pre-sale tickets, and that lead up to it, the fun part was going on and seeing what people did, like, don't bring so much food, make sure you bring this, don't bring this, and just seeing all that stuff. And then for my wife and I, it's like every time we go out shopping and Target would have a sale on camping equipment, it was just fun to buy all those things, you know. We, you know, by June we had this kind of cool setup, and you know, we bought lights and decorated our tent and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun, and we didn't buy a grill or anything else, so we got all the recommendations was spot on. And
I have taken way too much joy in like decorating camp. you really shouldn't. I mean, it's not really the most important thing, but for us, it's the most important moment. Rolling out carpet and, you know, hanging lights really becomes our favorite thing to do on a Wednesday night, which, you know, maybe we'll just be doing it in the yard this year, Barry. Because let's be honest. This ain't happening.
No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. No, I disagree with you, Brad. I think it's important. It's fun when we're putting it up. It's fun to see people's reactions.
Ain't fun when it starts raining.
It's not fun. It's not fun Monday morning.
Yeah,
taking it all down. But you know, that's part of it. So
part of it, though. I appreciate that advice. That we did bring carpet.
Yeah, the carpet was. I'm telling you, when. I can't explain to you the how hard my campmates' eyes rolled
when I started explaining to the thing that things I started wanted to bring 10 years ago. And the one that got everybody was carpet. They mocked me and made fun of me and just, I mean, wrecked me day after day for weeks leading up to it. And then the second that carpet gets there, everybody's like, you know what? Carpet's a pretty good idea.
It was the Bissell that was over the top.
I did bring a vacuum cleaner one year. Yes, I did.
It wasn't just the carpet. It was the Bissell.
Yeah. Well, I have to maintain a very clean space.
It was, we used it. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't complain.
I'm going to have to put a timeout real quick. If you can hit pause, I've got to find a charger. I didn't know I'm dying here. Hang on a second. Hang on.
So can't much. Pause. We're live.
Yeah. So much work. I really don't know if it's worth it or not.
We'll see where this goes. We're going to cut this in post, but we never do anything in post. Is that the.
No.
Fix it in post. It'll never get fixed.
We're not.
David, your wife, you guys, we love asking couples this, especially. Sure. Did you guys go to everything together or did you ever split up?
We went most of it together. We did split up. There was the time, I think I saw Davey by myself because it was like, what, mid-afternoon when that happened?
Yeah, we were there.
She was like, yeah, it was hot. So she said,
probably.
Nope.
You probably were right there with us then. You went from Davey right to Warren Treaty, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a band smile more than those guys were?
Oh no.
They were so happy.
That's awesome. Yeah. I loved like that, and I mentioned like
minor set like, change.
Them being there and being you could just they were authentic loved being there and loved doing what they're doing, and that's contagious, I think, you know, and That was the fun part about it too.
That was absolutely, Brad. We were just talking about that Davey set. David and his wife. No, your wife didn't go. David went, and we were just talking about how. I asked him if he'd ever seen a band smile more than those guys were.
They were happy. They acted like the way we're gonna act post quarantine COVID, hugging everybody, loving everything. That's gonna be us here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They were happy. Is that the only one you guys split up? What'd she do? Just hang out and kind of try to stay out of the sun?
Yeah, I tell you one thing, going VIP and getting those the AC tents that were all spread across the center room.
That's, good move.
That's gold. Move. So so she stayed in there. She probably got like a massage and you know, drinking inside the AC tent. So I told her I definitely want to see that one. That was based off your guys' recommendations. So I said I can't miss that one. So I went out and saw that one. Other than that, we saw a lot of it together. She has pretty good music taste, a really good music taste, and we like everything under the sun. So we'll see anything, you know. We don't have one lane that we stay in. So that was the fun part.
When you saw the lineup this year, it was a no brainer.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome.
Are you going to go no matter what the lineup was?
We usually go no matter what. We like the lineup to us is just the icing on the cake. You know, we have so much fun just being there doing everything, really. So, and we know we're going to find great people, and we know we're going to find people that we didn't even know about, which I think is half the fun too. So,
yeah.
It's just the overall experience.
So here's the thing, you know, you've got Jazz Fest was canceled and it was supposed to go on this weekend. Well, a local radio station, one that I don't work for, has put on Jazz Fest in place, where basically they'll play all of the old clips from Jazz Fest, and they've got markets around town that because everybody loves the festival food, right? For instance, spicy pie. There's markets in town that will deliver you the food that you so badly wanted to buy at Jazz Fest, like the crawfish boudin or the crawfish enchiladas. And, you know, by the way, if we could pull this off, Bonnaroo is not going to happen, right? But I think that we all would crowd around our computer screens and watch a Bonnaroo live feed of every artist that we wanted to see. With maybe, you know, spicy pie delivered to our house. I think we could figure this out, couldn't we?
I think so. That works for me.
It's really interesting. Our friend Trevin and I can't even think of his name now.
Good friend.
It's killing me. I'm embarrassed.
Man.
But he
when you have a friend like Barry, yeah, it's almost like you have.
I'll think of it in a minute.
Friend like Barry.
David Champion. I'm sorry, David. I'm being distracted because I'm getting texts from work. So, David posted a poster of some other festival that's happening similar to what you're talking about. And it's a great lineup, but I don't know that I want to watch music on my computer screen. That's not what it's about. I can do that anytime, you know?
I haven't been a big fan either. It's not.
I get it. I know what they're doing. I respect them for doing it, but, and maybe June 11th, I'll feel differently because we're not in Manchester and I'll, you know, be looking for something. I don't know. It's just weird to me.
You watch any live streams?
I do. I like it every once in a while. I mean, yeah. I think come June, I mean, what happened to the Bonnaroo live stream before? Like, it was awesome to watch it live and,
year.
Nothing. Barry, really? Get on that with your.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Investigation.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I know. I really always liked, like, the reason why I can mark certain shows off of my grid is because I watched the live stream of Coachella and I'll say, yeah, it didn't work. we all saw like the Lizzo thing coming because her Coachella set was just so, you know, even with the technical issues, we're like, man, there's something about this stage show. Yes, the live streams work in some avenues, but yeah, you're right. They don't necessarily grab me ever, but boy, it sure does feel good when they're on and Bonnaroo's happening and you're not there. You know, it's almost like listening to Bonnaroo radio. It's not really well done, but thank God it's there, and it feels like I'm being touched, or I'm having a. That's what it is. We're having a universal experience, right? We're all actually doing the same thing. You know, that's why the NFL draft's numbers were through the roof. You know, very rarely are we having these communal experiences anymore, and we finally, Tiger King. Why is Tiger King doing so well and had 18 billion minutes watched on Netflix? It's because we're finally all doing something together.
Yeah, it's timing. It's a communal thing. Absolutely. I don't know. Like I said, come June, somebody's going to come up with something. I'll probably watch, or at least be part of something.
Yeah, and I can understand, Barry, you not wanting to watch live streams as much as maybe someone else, because you're watching it on that computer over the right of your shoulder. How are you watching any live stream on that 1994 Mac?
I'll tell you what's embarrassing. I counted the other day. I think I have 11 such computers in my home. I don't know why. I just can't get rid of some things. I want to put a fishbowl in that one. I just hadn't gotten around to it. That's the answer, Brad. I haven't gotten around to it. Ask me anything, and that's going to be the answer.
Taco, you watching any live streams?
Not really. We watched one a few weeks ago from a local band that was doing something here in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. It's just not the same. I mean, you're sitting on the couch. You know, it's not the same experience. You could be watching movies. It's not a replacement for like actually being there live.
But what if you were watching it in the bus, in the Volkswagen bus? Wouldn't that be more fun?
That'd be more fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I could set up like a screen in here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Who doesn't love camping in the garage? It is.
Well, it depends on if you're with people.
Yeah,
too.
The poor bus. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's part of, you know, live shows is you experience it together. Well, if you're sitting at home, you know, it's you're not interacting with as much.
Yeah.
The PVR is a lot cheaper though.
I had a feeling.
David, are you guys planning to go in September?
We're thinking about it. I mean, we're trying to figure out a different way to do it. Yeah, if it happens. I mean, I'd love to go. I wanted to do the campground, but that got sold out. I was trying to figure out how to do it, and they said the tickets went on sale like January 1st, call of Jan 1st or whatever that first Monday was, sold out. And so I have a room booked at the, what is it, the Holiday Inn, right there.
Yeah.
Just to try and do familiar. It different.
I visit it every day.
Yeah.
At certain points of the day, I visit it for, you know, just to connect with my people, you know.
Yeah, so yeah, that's so nice of you.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't actually have tickets at this moment. So, and I don't know what's going to happen. So it's, you know, if it happens in there, like anybody else, we're trying to shuffle around and seeing if you can get work off, or, you know, and seeing if you feel confident in going in September. Yeah, I don't know what's going to be like in September either, you know. So
I think that's like going to be the biggest holdback of any of this is not if Insert Festival happens. It's how comfortable do you feel actually being there? Yeah. You know, I had a conversation with one of our campmates yesterday, Brian Stone, the host of the world's most listened to and downloaded podcast in the history of podcasts, the Stone on Air podcast. And he said, "I don't care, bro. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not going to live in fear." You know, one of those kind of arguments. But I kept having to remind him, it's like, dude, it's not about you. It's about what you might be, you know, bringing to the party. You're invited to the party. It's all the friends that you bring that are the problem, that, you know, you don't know what you're carrying. You don't know what you
back home. That's right. Right. Exactly right.
And if New Orleans is any sort of indication, look what giant, mass events do and how it can then turn into a big time problem. Mardi Gras was the source of damn near all of our cases. You know, you get done with Mardi Gras, you don't know you're that sick, and you go visit grandma, and you've got an entire old folks home now ill. So it's not just you not being scared, bro, but it's like, how much of this do you want to keep poking? How often do you want to keep poking the bear and challenging this when all the science says you better not poke the bear? So I don't know. I don't know what it looks like, even if it were to happen. And, you know, would it scare me off, Barry? I don't know. I really don't know.
No, it's a legitimate concern. I mean, I've pretty much been holed up. I go out once a week to, you know, the store or whatever, or run down the street. That's it. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't really put much thought into it. Like, I'm scared. I'm just trying to be respectful, I guess. And I am worried. Yeah. My wife goes to work. Kind of worries me that she comes back home, but she's not interacting with a lot of people currently. But if they open the restaurants back up and the hotels, which they're doing, I guess, this week here.
Monday,
yeah, tomorrow. So, I mean, nobody
this
knows.
This is my nod of disapproval.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea.
Nobody knows. And I mean, people that are arguing that we got to get back to normalcy and it's hurting businesses and all that, that's not the argument. You know, I get that. Yeah, there's Taco.
Okay, but here's, I'll get you one step further about how you just don't know. By the way, you ain't going to Bible study. You're going to basically push your body beyond its abilities of drinking, of no sleep, of whatever it is, other things that you're putting into your body. I mean, you're living on spicy pie. I mean, you are destroying your immune system for 5 days, 4 days, however, and then you think that, you know, you're invincible?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
That's a good point. I think I've laughed about it. It was 2 years ago. I got home that Monday morning and don't remember anything until Thursday. And it wasn't, you know, that I was drugged out. I was just so tired.
Barry, you are in an advanced age, though.
I'm old, which is to your point.
Pretty much anything.
To your point. So I go up there and live unhealthily for 5 days. And then, you know, God, if I catch, you know, something, then, yeah, it's a bad deal. And as we've said many times, the Bonnaroo people don't want that either. They don't want that on their conscience. Their insurance people and lawyers certainly don't want that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
there's a lot. Yeah.
Hypothetically, if it were to happen, who were you excited to see? Who was your top three?
My top three, I want to see, I'm going to go a homer pick. I want to see Camp because they're from Columbus.
They're from Columbus, that's right.
Yeah, so I want to see Camp. Who was it? Briston Maroney?
Yeah.
Keeps getting name dropped last week in the episode. Yeah. And then, you know, I kind of want to go just hit all the big names. I think, you know, going seeing like a Miley Cyrus and Dolly comes, that'd be great. Yeah. Or, you know, yeah. I'll going back to college, I want to go see Nelly and see the Saint Lunatics and whatever, you know, whatever else happened. Just that's like a fun type of thing. And I know it's different. I think you guys went to see T-Pain, which wasn't so great.
Yeah.
But when we did our walk by, which was way far back, everybody was singing along, really? You know, but we weren't up close. We just did the walk, but it was so packed because it was overflown everywhere.
Well, that's what we did too. We did the walk by of T-Pain too. And the reason why I say that it was not good is because the guy on stage was just screaming at us and telling us that we didn't appreciate T-Pain as much. And T-Pain left after two songs and comes back 20 minutes later like he needed a nap. It was very odd.
See, I didn't know any of that. I just did the walk by, sounded awesome. We're always having fun. So I don't know. So you're not going to go see The Baby or...
The Baby? You know what, though?
His catchy tunes.
If there is not a bigger hip-hop artist on the planet right now than Sir Baby. And once the grid came out, I probably would have figured out a way to checked out Lord Baby. But which by the way, Lord Taco, the running joke is he's great at identifying babies and he's really good. You can find any baby and he'll be able to tell you whether or not it's a baby. Lord Taco, DaBaby or not a baby?
He's not really a baby.
Not a baby. I knew it.
I've seen a lot of babies and he is not one.
Not a baby.
Not a real baby.
It's official.
Totally, I feel totally scammed.
It's official now.
Yeah.
What about your end? What's the top three going in? You think? You know, happens sometime.
Barry can take my top three. He knows my top three. He doesn't have to look at a lineup. He knows what number one is.
Brittany.
Yeah, I got to see Brittany Howard.
Yeah.
You ready for number two? Who's number two?
Lizzo is two. I don't know who three is.
It's literally just the people that I know. I'm going to go one, two, three people I know.
Yeah, that's the ones he's actually spoken to.
Yeah. People I can scam to call my friends.
Is it Ed O'Brien is now three?
EOB, yeah. Me and my friend Ed O'Brien.
At least you have your reasons.
Uh-huh.
I really want to see Miley, David. That's the one I've talked about before. That one to me is right up there as the probably not going to see her anywhere else thing. So that's going to be, that's a big opportunity. But there's a long list on that lineup if it were to happen, especially the original lineup for me.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people to check off on my wish list. Ed O'Brien, all three of those, to be honest. I mean, those were all good ones.
You know, the thing about what sucks about the Ed O'Brien thing, and I think we might have mentioned it last week. If you haven't listened to the Ed O'Brien interview, we posted it last week, and give it a try if you haven't gotten to it. But it's guys like that that I feel really bad about. I mean, this guy, you know, waited and waited and waited until it was time to pounce and release his only solo album ever, and then do a tour around it, and now, that's.
I think he'll be okay.
Yeah. I think he's gonna be okay.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't worry about him too much.
Yeah, I care and worry about my friends. You know, their success is my success, and my future artist past.
Send him a note. There it is. Yeah, send him a note that you're thinking about him. I will.
What do you usually do? Any other festivals other than Bonnaroo?
No, it's usually Bonnaroo. We'll hit a couple concerts and stuff, but that's it. Like, speaking of coming up this summer, we wanted to see David Gray. He was coming to Cleveland, but, you know, I'm sure that hasn't been officially canceled or postponed, but I don't see that happening. Last year we went to see Death Cab over in Vegas. We were out in Vegas for something. They happened to be in there. So we just kind of take up the opportunities that we can. It's tough in the Midwest.
Your normal city is Cleveland? If you were to go to shows, it's Cleveland, huh?
Cleveland, yeah, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Mostly it's Cleveland. I grew up in Canton, so that's like 45 minutes away. So that's usually my go-to city.
I'm trying to think if there's any other music festivals in and around the Ohio Valley like that. Which one am I missing? I feel like there's a really big one in the Ohio Valley, and I cannot remember what it was. Yeah,
I'll tell you one I want to go to is, and I was thinking about this year, was the Wonder Bus in Columbus. They started that one a year or so ago, and they had some good vibes coming off that one. Of course, that one, you know, who knows what's happening there too, because that's the end of August. So,
well, look, here's the thing, and we've mentioned it before, but they got pressure from the city. Voodoo Fest did. But Voodoo Fest is in the end of October. Canceled.
Yeah.
You know, you can reschedule. You can have a rescheduled date all you want to, middle of October, if New Orleans is not willing to throw a party. I don't know anybody else is going to be willing to.
Yeah. They're still seriously talking about college football, to your point. And if those guys are talking about not playing, then... yeah, it's pretty serious. And it's as Brad said, everybody's trying to get through the window, and the window is closing. It keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
You can convince me that some sports could make sense without audience participation. Like, for instance, golf is going to do fine. Baseball actually would probably need this. Baseball needs, you know, a thwart of adrenaline to try and figure out how to make this show better on TV, right? This would force them to try and create a better TV product because nobody's going to be in the stands. I don't know how you do football and, you know, big sporting events like that without audiences and without crowds. You know, it's going to be hard to watch. It's going to be impossible to engage with. Baseball, you know, maybe I don't know, maybe not soccer, but baseball and golf, easy. It's easy enough. But football festivals, get out of here. I don't know how you do that.
I did hear an interesting conversation about the Ryder Cup, though, just because you brought up golf. The players don't want to have it. I think it was Rory McIlroy saying, of all the tournaments, don't do that one without fans. It's just be a golf tournament, you know, which makes sense.
Yeah, there's a difference between like the Ryder Open and the Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
You know, nobody really cares.
Right. That's a great point.
Man, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much for being part of the Bonnaroo family and part of the podcast family, man. We can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you. I said this. You guys are great. I appreciate you guys doing this because, again, you guys are the ramp up to Bonnaroo for me. And I know a lot of other people. So it's like first time talking, but I feel like I know you guys and you guys are part of the crew. Just listening to you guys go back and forth and doing your picks and, you know, interviewing people. It's a lot of fun. I tune in every week, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, we try not to have it much different than what camp would actually be like.
I love it.
it gets brutal. It gets very, very brutal.
Yeah. You know, and Brian Stone keeps coming back.
Keeps coming back, and I don't really know why.
Things have been said to Brian Stone that I could not imagine, and he keeps coming back.
I mean, if I said it to anyone else, they'd pull a gun on me.
Yeah.
But for Brian, it's like, okay, that's fine. Hey. Yeah, that's probably fair.
He'll eventually say stop.
Yeah, stop. Thanks so much again. And, you know, hopefully, you know, if we don't see you in 2020, we'll see you definitely in 2021, buddy.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Listening.
All right, take it
easy. OH.
IO.
All right. David, a Patreon from the What Podcast, a podcast for Bonnaroovians by Bonnaroovians and expanding into our world of all things COVID. I mean, with less and less Bonnaroo things to talk about, it's going to basically from here on out just be fashion advice from Barry. It's going to be anything and everything we can talk about. How to home repair with Barry.
How many days can you go with just one pair of shorts? That's the big question.
Well, it depends on if you're wearing them or not, Barry.
Oh, I'm always it's not a pretty picture even by myself.
Any more Patreons to read before we head out?
Two more groups: Marty McFly, we've got Andrew McBride, Catherine Riccio, David Salano, Jacob Marty, Justin Nigro, Meredith Rittman, and the High Five Group, Brooke Tussey, David and Sharla Horton, Daniel and Sharla Horton, David Henson, Ella, Phil Nye, Chicane.
With friends like Barry.
Ahead.
With Laura Taco for Barry Corder, I'm Brad Steiner. We'll talk to you next week. Maybe? Are we doing one next week? What do we got next week?
We don't have anything lined up.
Well.
What should we do?
We'll see. Your guess is as good as ours. Talk to you then on what podcast. See you later. Love you. Bye.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year? That matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.